Welcome to the Wheel With It podcast with your host, Devin. At Wheel With It, we are dedicated to exploring DEI issues in a fair, balanced, and fun way. Let's get into the episode.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Wheel With It. Today, we have a very good episode lined up for you. We have Corinne with us today. How are you today, Corinne?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me here.
Tell us about yourself, and then we'll get started.
Yeah, I am professionally a registered dietitian who works with individuals in recovery from eating disorders. I also do a lot of work with body image healing for individuals and folks who want to approach food and body from a non-diet, weight-inclusive lens. I am also a mom of two small children. One is almost 5 and one is almost 3. Yeah, that's a little bit about the work I do in the world and where I am just in mom life at this moment in time. Both kids are in school as we record this, so it's very quiet. Yes.
Yes. So where are we with that as far as body image? Is it worse than it's ever been, or are we just seeing that?
With body image generally for individuals across...
Or life? Body image, eating disorders, like all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't have any hard data, which I probably should. I know that after COVID and lockdowns and things, just generally speaking, mental health, eating disorders, body image concerns, like really skyrocketed across the board for people. So
mental health went out the window. My mental health after COVID was, during COVID, it was fine. But after, because I was finishing up schools, after we came out of COVID and I graduated from school, it was worse than it's ever been.
Yeah. It's been a really professionally a busy time, and it's for me, and it's been a really hard time, I think, for folks just generally coping.
So what do you think is causing all of this body image disorder thing, and why is it Instagram?
I think that there are a lot of different factors. One of the things that we do know across the board that is the largest indicator for sparking an eating disorder or body image concerns or disordered eating is any sort of starting of a diet, of trying to intentionally lose weight. What happened, I think, during COVID times and during just coming back into the world as the world opened back up, is that a lot of people spent a lot of time isolated on TikTok, on Instagram, and some folks were trying to better their health, but there's just so many messages around that. And that if someone is vulnerable, which many people are, to developing disordered eating behaviors or feeling like they want to change their body, you begin to see kind of a really uptick in, I would call it eating disorder symptoms, body dissatisfaction. We have embodiment kind of going out the window, which is a little bit different than body image, which I'm happy to talk about, but a lot of different factors. And one of them that we know is that comparison, screen time, isolation from others, like all of those pieces really go into negatively affecting somebody's relationship with food and body.
So what is embodiment?
That's a great question. So embodiment is the experience in one's body. So it's how do I feel in my body? Whereas body image is more how do I think I look to other people? Embodiment is what is the internal experience that I'm feeling right now in this moment? And then body image is more how do I think I look in the eyes of other people? They're quite different. And sometimes they're used interchangeably, but they're not actually the same thing, if that makes sense.
So my current therapist right now, because I'm a proud user of therapy, she specializes in trauma. And not that I've been through any major trauma, but she specializes in trauma. And when she said that, I almost hung up the phone on the first appointment. And I was like, fine. I'll give her a shout. I already booked the appointment and she's been helping me a lot and like digging up stuff I didn't even know I still had. And we talk about embodiment all the time. And I still didn't know quite what it was until you said that. So thank you. You've helped me a great deal today.
Good. Yeah. I think it's really interesting because, for example, in my office, I can be asking in this moment, what are you feeling internally? What are you noticing is coming up for you right now in your body? And we can feel our emotions and we can also feel like bodily sensations in our body. For example, one I'll often use is anxiety. For some people, you feel your heart beating really fast. Maybe you feel like you're sweating. That would be the ability to feel into that. And not everyone can. Some of my clients who identify more as neurodivergent, they can't necessarily have that degree. And everybody has a different degree of attunement. But the ability to feel into and then respond in a caring, timely manner to what's going on physically is a big, big deal. And that's actually the premise when we think about intuitive eating. That's the premise of intuitive eating as well, because that's also based off of the concept of attunement. I'm happy to talk a little bit about that too, but it's very similar.
Okay, I know the answer because I've been in trauma therapy for the last, or with the trauma therapist for the last 2 months. I hesitate to call it trauma therapy. But what is attunement exactly?
Yeah.
People that don't know?
That's a great question because I'm talking about a lot of, I'm happy you've got to stop me because I'm talking about in a lot of different lingo. But attunement is essentially, it's very similar to embodiment from my perspective. Somebody could be listening to this who is much higher than myself in terms of their research and whatnot. But in
we don't have very many.
Oh, no. But in my perception, so attunement is what, and this is the concept of intuitive eating too. What am I feeling in this moment? And can I respond to that feeling in a caring, timely manner? So for example, if you're hungry, this is very simple. If you're hungry and you have the resources and you have food available, can you respond to that level of hunger in a caring, timely manner? Or do you wait and not eat and try to restrict because you're trying to have your body look a certain way? Or if you are feeling really dysregulated and anxious, can you in that moment recognize that? That's the concept of mindfulness. Maybe go take a 5-minute walk, take big breaths in, read something, whatever you need to do. But can you then respond to that in a caring, timely manner? So attunement is the concept of, can I listen to my own internal world of what's going on in my body? And then can I respond to that information in a caring and timely manner? And then if not, what is the block that's preventing me from doing so? And I think that's the really interesting piece, the most interesting, to be able to take to therapy, to be able to work on in nutrition therapy. But that's really interesting information.
You said that people that were neurodivergent have a harder time doing that. And that immediately stood out to me because I'm neurodivergent. Can you explain why that is? And I really don't know because I didn't know that until you just said that.
This is just from my practice. And depending on what someone, how they identify, whatever language we want to use, what they have, maybe if you have ADHD or if there's some sensory issues going on, I think of that sometimes as avoidant restrictive food intake disorder, ARFID. Some people, I'm going all over the place, but some individuals with ARFID have very high anxiety and very low appetite tone. For example, in that case, it would be very challenging to just go and eat based off of hunger cues when somebody's hunger cues are not very strong. So we would be adding in a level of eating in terms of self-care or mechanical eating. Another example would be, we could use this as the same way. I have clients, many clients with ADHD, and the attention span and the ability to tune in internally is really challenged. So if we're just going to say, listen to your body's cues and respond to those, and that's really challenging to do, that's not necessarily really fair to that individual. There's a lot of different pieces for each individual to understand, and then we have to work with that and figure out and problem solve what is going to help that individual have a caring, healthy relationship with food, and then also take care of their body. Those are just a couple examples.
Have you worked with anybody with cerebral palsy?
I have not. No.
Okay.
Yes. So I have not.
If you work, I don't have any, but if you work with them, then you have to come back on this podcast and it's about me all around how it affects it. So explain what intuitive eating is for people that don't know and how to get started doing that.
Yeah, great question. So intuitive eating was a concept developed by two wonderful dietitians, Evelyn Tribole, Elise Resch. They wrote the book. If you haven't read it, I would highly recommend reading it. The concept is based off of research, and it is based off of the concept.
What's it called?
The book is called Intuitive Eating.
Okay.
Yeah. And you want to look for the book by Evelyn and Elise, and those are the original authors. And the concept is based off of what we're talking about, based off of attunement, based off of, can you listen to your body and respond in a caring, timely manner? And if not, what are the blocks that are preventing you from doing so? There's 10 different principles within that book. Everything from ditch diet culture, discover satisfaction, cope with your emotions with kindness, joyful movement. So there's 10 different principles, all from somebody's relationship with exercise and food and emotions. So it's a really wonderful entryway into eating without having to necessarily follow using your body, using your own ways that you learn how to take care of yourself. It's a really good point to doing that.
Can you put that link in the chat so that we can have it for the show notes? So tell us about joyful movement.
Yeah. So joyful movement is based off the concept of what are ways in which you can move your body that you enjoy and that feel pleasurable rather than feel punitive or like you have to do something in order to earn food. It's really, in what ways can you experience being in your body that you enjoy?
So how can people get started with intuitive movement? Because that sounds like something I need to do. Or joyful movement, whatever you call it.
Yeah, I think a really great idea and concept is, what did you used to enjoy doing as a child? Or maybe as a young adult, what type of movement did you like to do then? I think in our culture, we think of movement as I need to go to the gym or I need to do X, Y, and Z for this amount of time per day. And for some people, that movement could be sitting in a chair and learning how to do certain arm exercises. For some people, it may be going to a Pilates class. I think that we have to take a real big step back and redefine for ourselves where we are in different ages, stages, and phases of life of what movement looks like. And I think that the concept that changes based off of how much time you have, based off of what you're physically able to do, based off of your health, all of those factors come in when somebody thinks about that. And instead of having it be shameful, being like, you have to do X, Y, or Z, the concept of joyful movement allows the individual and to think about what feels good for them and what feels not stressful, but stress relieving. And that's a big difference than how we've typically thought about movement, generally speaking.
So can we talk about Instagram for a second and what it's creating, like body image? Like, talk about Instagram for a second.
Gosh, yeah. I have to say that when I had my second child, I went off of Instagram. I personally think that it is just such a mind suck and time suck for individuals. And the comparison factor is so significant.
I used to love Instagram and I still do for keeping up with friends and stuff. And
yeah,
of course, the pod promoting that. But
yeah.
And now I realize what a mind suck it is, now that I've been in like serious therapy for years.
Yeah. Now,
for about, I've been in and out since I was 12, but seriously, from that, I like 5-ish, especially the last 2.5 years. And now I realize like what a comparison trap that thing is.
Yes. Yeah. And we do know that the more time we spend comparing our lives to other people's lives, the worse that we tend to feel about ourselves. We also know that the more time somebody spends, for example, focused on their body and the physical looks, the worse somebody is going to feel about themselves as well. And then just the nature of Instagram and how it is designed, there's this very addictive quality to it. And so that also then takes away one of the things that we know is really important for health and being, which is social connection. So when I think about this, there's so many people on Instagram comparing themselves to other people, fixating on what type of maybe movement or how they should be eating or how they should be living. So there's all of these pieces that when we're really vulnerable and you're spending a lot of time on there, it can be a harmful environment. And at the same time, I have to say that I've had clients where, you know, that live in areas where they find no one who identifies like themselves, but who have found groups or individuals that they look up to that are very...
Yeah, that's the good part about it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So marginalized groups, individuals where nobody, it's hard to find maybe people in certain sizes or with certain backgrounds or that are with the same physical limitations. I've had clients find wonderful resources online. I think it takes a really important understanding of the individuals care for themselves. What is helpful and then when does it become harmful?
Yeah, that's great. What do you do in like a typical therapy session?
So just as a disclaimer, I'm a registered dietitian.
Yeah, so I'm sorry. I didn't mean therapy.
Like nutrition. Yeah, but it does. And I think this is interesting in terms of I do identify it as nutrition therapy. So when somebody comes in, we talk about, it's not just here's your eating plan, goodbye. It's so much more than that. So it's everything around somebody's relationship and feelings around food, somebody's nutrition. Are they meeting those needs? What are self-care? What is the relationship like with their body? So, and exercise and movement. So it's anything related to food and feelings, body image, movement, and how do they all tie together? And one of the things that I think is so wonderful about the work is that it is so nuanced and everyone is so different. Understanding and looking at what is somebody wanting to do? Is someone wanting to have less body hatred and have less fear of eating and being comfortable with variety and flexibility with food? It's just really interesting work and looks at who is this individual and what are their goals for themselves.
What exactly is like the difference between, I'm like a picky eater, but that's just because I think my taste buds didn't develop quite right in utero. So I don't know if we could do anything about that, but is there like a cure for picky eating?
I think in terms of that piece of it, I think it looks at, I think, first of all, a big question, is it actually negatively impacting your life in any way? And some, I always look at that. And then I look at, for the individual, what are they wanting to change? Are they wanting to change anything?
But I cannot bring myself to, I had never tried an egg, except for when it's in like a baked good. But as far as like an egg by itself, I've never tried it. And I cannot bring myself to put it in my mouth. Like, I gag every time I see an egg. And I used to gag like every time I like saw an egg and smelled it. But then I tried to put one in my mouth. I can't do it. I'm sorry. And so what is that? Is that, and I don't want to be rude. Like, if somebody has eggs and puts them on my plate, like to be nice or something, like, I don't want to be rude. But I guess just tell them we don't like eggs, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that is totally legitimate, that if something is going to make you gag and you're not interested in trying and you're surviving in other ways, then to me, unless you feel really strongly about learning to like or eat eggs, then that would be totally okay.
My dad just wants me to try one. You don't have to like them. I just want you to try one. I'm like, Dad, I cannot. I don't know what it is, but I cannot. I'm impressed that I held it and brought it up to my mouth. I cannot put it in my mouth. I don't know what it is. I guess it's just, they look disgusting to me.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. So I would imagine that wouldn't be of importance to you to work on.
So now that we've detected a little bit of my picky eating, is there anything else you add before we get off here?
You know, what I think what is important on the topic of developing a positive relationship with your body is that one of the most important pieces that is across the research around all work pertaining to body image and embodiment is the concept of self-compassion. So that is fundamentally huge. People often think I need to change my body in order to like, tolerate, respect, love my body, whatever word feels right to you. But that is not typically the case. Typically, in research-wise and just in practice-wise, it takes a gentle, kind, compassionate voice with oneself in order to develop a different type of relationship with one's body. So I think that message of being kind to yourself, listening to your needs and trying to respond to those needs in a caring and timely manner, and really looking at ways that you can treat yourself like a friend and be gentle and kind with your body, that is really very imperative and probably the most important thing across the board when I think about somebody's relationship with their body.
So that's so funny, because that's what we're working on in my therapy right now, not necessarily in reference to eating, but in reference to other things. So where can people follow you on social media?
That's a really good question. I don't have social media anymore.
Okay. So that makes it easy.
So, but what I do have a podcast that I'm going to start bringing back. I don't know how often, but my podcast is called The Body Image Podcast with Corinne Dobis. It is on Apple Podcasts. It should be on other places as well, but there's all sorts of topics there.
And we'll put a link in the show notes for people.
Perfect.
It's on your website, right?
Yeah, it's on my website, corinnedobis.com. It's on Apple Podcasts. So the Body Image Podcast is a great place to go to listen to more of these conversations around different topics.
Okay. And maybe I can be a guest on the Body Image Podcast.
Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
But you know what? I think that would be a wonderful idea. And I'm doing my podcast there.
Is there anything else that you would like to add before we get off here?
I think my one last note is that if you are really struggling with your relationship with your body and you're an avid social media user, that came up a number of times here. So I think it would be really worthwhile going through your feeds, going through your accounts and removing any account, anyone you follow who really brings out comparison factor, negatively talks about body or food, because another piece that we know about body image is that surrounding yourself with others who strive to have a positive body image or want to have one is also really important as well. So doing a detox of your social media feed of diet culture and negative folks is a really important one.
Can we talk about Kim Kardashian for just a second? Because I love her and what she does. I really do.
Okay.
We're going to be rolling their eyes, but I love the way she does criminal justice reform work. And so, but her Instagram, I'm like, No. I had to unfollow her because I was like, okay, I will never be able to go to that place in that meeting. I had to unfollow her. So.
There you go.
Tip for the day. You can like Kim Kardashian, but please unfollow her on Instagram and get this nifty little app called AtWalk. You set a schedule in it. And there's a free and a paid version. I use the paid version because I just scheduled it for you when it works right. But you set a schedule and you set the apps it wants you to block. And you have to go into the app block app to remove the block. So you can't just hit approve 15 minutes. So that's useful too. We will put all that stuff in the show notes too.
Good to know. Good to know.
Thank you so much for being here, and we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to follow the show and our guests on social media and subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast app using the links in the show notes. Please remember to rate and review us. See you next time.